From the Banker's studio on Library Square, this is The Rundown, a live exploration of local news, current events, and issues that matter to you. Coming up on the program, Salt Lake City Police Chief Chris Burbank gives his positions on immigration enforcement and on gun control.
Imagine if I told my 450 police officers, from now on, we're going to carry our rifles slung across our chests as we do business every day. The outcry would be, this is a police state, and the police chief has lost his mind. But yet we're okay with the public doing just the same thing?
Also, we'll take a look at the local reaction to the U.S. Supreme Court's landmark decision on same-sex marriage. All that and a local news summary just ahead on The Rundown, here on KCPW. First, This World News from the BBC. You're listening to The Rundown, a KCPW-produced news and issues show that looks at emerging stories, current events, politics, and ideas, and featuring conversations with local newsmakers, trailblazers, cultural entrepreneurs, and more. Later in the program, we'll have an in-depth look at gun policy and immigration enforcement with Salt Lake City Police Chief Chris Burbank. But we begin today with the landmark decision by the Supreme Court striking down a law that denies federal benefits to married gay couples. KCPW reporter Kim Shusky reports on local reactions to the court's ruling on the Defense of Marriage Act.
There was celebration and reflection at the Utah Pride Center today after the Supreme Court struck down the Federal Defense of Marriage Act and refused to rule on California's Proposition 8, which banned gay marriage in the state. Valerie Larrabee is the executive director of the center.
Today we celebrate, we rejoice, and we express immense gratitude to the justices of the Supreme Court, who with wisdom and courage stood on the right side of history and for a more free and just country.
Sue Rice and Lisa Corin have been together for 14 years. They were sitting on a couch watching TV when they heard the news.
Oh, we hugged and kissed, and I called my mom in Boston, and I said, hey, we won, and we'll be home to get married, so it's excellent.
The 5-4 decision on the Defense of Marriage Act says that the law is unconstitutional and that same-sex couples who are legally married in the 12 states that it's allowed have to be treated the same as heterosexual couples in terms of federal benefits. However, Clifford Roski, associate professor of law at the University of Utah, says not much will change for same-sex couples in Utah.
There are still some complicated questions left over. One of them is, what if a couple marries in Iowa and then moves to Utah? Are they entitled to federal benefits? And the answer to that is likely to be worked out in future cases, really on a case-by-case basis. We might get a different answer for tax purposes and immigration purposes, for example.
But in the longer term, says Roski, the decision might have major implications for same-sex couples across the country.
Reading the DOMA decision today, which said that DOMA injures same-sex couples, that it demeans their relationships, that it humiliates their children, I think it's pretty clear which way the Supreme Court's going in this. When you've got Justice Kennedy talking about this issue in that way, and he's the fifth vote on the issue, I think the truth is the handwriting's on the wall. He didn't want to decide it today, but I think at some point there will be a case when they're forced to decide it, and I think it's pretty clear which way it's going to go.
Roski says the California Prop 8 case did not provide for a direct challenge to laws banning gay marriage because the state refused to defend the law. The Supreme Court did not rule on the merits of the case because they found that neither the Supreme Court nor a federal appeals court had jurisdiction to hear the case. He says there are already cases winding their way through the courts that may more directly challenge the constitutionality of state bans on same-sex marriage, particularly one in Nevada and one in Utah.
There are certainly plenty of same-sex couples who want to challenge laws against same-sex marriage. What you need, then, is a state that will defend that law. Because one thing that we learned today is the sponsors of the law are not allowed to defend it. The governor, the attorney general, the state itself has to come into court to defend the law. That didn't happen in California, but surely in Utah, for example, the state is going to defend the law, the attorney general.
Three same-sex Utah couples filed in the U.S. District Court in March. They are challenging Amendment 3 of the Utah Constitution that denies the right to marry or form civil unions, a right that the Supreme Court has previously ruled in Loving versus Virginia as a basic right.
There's one half sentence which is really important in the opinion. The Justice Kennedy, writing for the Supreme Court, said, now, of course, when we say that states usually govern marriage, they still have to comply with the federal Constitution. And they cited the interracial marriage case from the late 1960s, where the court said, even though Virginia can say who can marry and who can't marry, it violated equal protection for them to say that whites can't marry people of color and vice versa.
Attorney Brett Tolman, who filed an amicus brief together with the Utah Pride Center for the DOMA and Prop 8 cases, agrees.
When the Attorney General says the Supreme Court is not forcing Utah to authorize marriage equality, he's accurate, but he should not be comfortable.
Utah may play a big role in same-sex marriage in the future. For KCPW, I'm Kim Shusky.
Now we turn to the news that President Obama announced a plan to decrease CO2 emissions in the United States. Yesterday, the president called on the Environmental Protection Agency to regulate emissions from new and existing power plants.
We limit the amount of toxic chemicals like mercury and sulfur and arsenic in our air or our water, but power plants can still dump unlimited amounts of carbon pollution into the air for free. That's not right, that's not safe, and it needs to stop.
The plan will also include measures to increase efficiency standards for appliances and businesses, expand natural gas extraction, and help local and state agencies prepare for climate-related impacts. None of the proposed measures will require approval by Congress. Utah's Senator Orrin Hatch released a statement that was typical of the responses released by other Republicans yesterday. The statement said in part, "Energy is the fuel of our nation's economic growth, and after one of the longest periods of economic stagnation in modern history, it's simply baffling that President Obama is proceeding with this unilateral energy policy that will hurt Americans struggling to pay their bills and get a job." The new EPA rules on existing power plants are expected to be finalized in 2015. I'm Roger McDonough for KCPW News, and you are listening to The Rundown. Please stay with us.
Steven Rosenberg, Liberty Heights Fresh, celebrating 20 years of good food in Salt Lake City and proffering a selection of locally grown, locally baked, locally milked, locally grazed, locally pressed, and locally laid eggs. And always have since 1993. Open every day on the corner of 1300 South and 1100 East. Liberty Heights Fresh. Hey, eat well.
I'm Fred Mosinger with Cafe Molise, dedicated KCPW supporters. Our dining rooms offer private dining for groups large and small. From family gatherings to corporate meetings to weddings, Cafe Molise has 3 dining rooms and a seasonal garden patio to accommodate your group. Open 7 days a week at 55 West, 100 South, and at cafemolise.com.
I'm Sean from Tabula Rasa. For over 25 years, we have featured handmade papers and cards, along with a curated collection of hardcover books about etiquette, manners, art, words, fashion, gardens, and architecture. We're proud to support KCPW. Tabula Rasa Social Stationers open 7 days a week in historic Trolley Square.
Open any Torah, Bible, or Quran, and it seems unambiguous. Homosexuality is a grave sin. But for some, these interpretations are changing.
A woman being with another woman who inspires her, that's what God wants from me. I know it.
I'm Maureen Fiedler. Join me for Gay in the Eyes of God, a special presentation from Interfaith Voices.
This Friday at 9 a.m. and 8 p.m. on KCPW.
Now on The Rundown, we turn to a conversation with Salt Lake City Police Chief Chris Burbank, who gave us his position on guns and immigration reform and the role of the police in both issues. Salt Lake City Police Chief Chris Burbank is in studio with us today. Chief Burbank, welcome to The Rundown.
Thank you for having me.
I thought I'd start with two topics that have been in the news lately, guns and immigration.
Two easy topics is what you're starting with, you said.
That's why these are softballs for you. In April, in the wake of the Sandy Hook shootings, you were one of a group of police chiefs around the nation who added your name to a statement condemning the U.S. Senate's rejecting of a series of gun control amendments. It was the Major Cities Chiefs Association that called the Senate's vote on the issue a disgrace. Maybe you could tell us about that or more broadly about the police perspective on gun control.
Well, the thing that was so disappointing as far as that particular vote that took place is there were some very reasonable things being put into place as far as background checks. And right now, we currently in the United States and have for many, many years restricted access to certain types of firearms. So if you want a Class 3 weapon, so an automatic weapon, a machine gun type, a silenced weapon or a suppressed weapon, or a short barrel, you can still get those, but you have to go through a background check. There's absolutely no reason that we can't put in place those same similar checks for other types of weapons in order to make sure that they don't fall into the wrong hands, because no one can argue this is an access issue. I don't care what side you're on. There are people who intend to kill and injure other individuals that have access to firearms, and they're doing just that. And so that is what is really a disgrace, that we are unwilling to deal with some of the facts that hit us right in the face on a regular basis. And in fact, the shootings around the country have gotten out of control. It's the number that have taken place.
And does it affect enforcement? I mean, law enforcement seems to be affected particularly harshly by criminals having guns. I mean, is this something that police pay more attention to maybe than your common citizen because of the fact that they could be confronted with somebody who hasn't gone through that background check and has still been able to attain that weapon?
Well, so there are several issues that revolve around that. One is the fact that I don't speak out a whole bunch against concealed weapons because at least we have a process. Now, I would like to see more of an education process in place in order to check somebody. But most of the time, and in fact, just a few weeks ago, I was in a grocery store dealing with a shoplifter. The police chief does work every once in a while. And the individual, when I encountered him, he said, "I have a concealed weapon." I took that weapon from him, and it went without a problem. Because he had had some education, because he knew what to do, it was not an issue. So again, that's not where I have the problem. Where I have the problem is the notion that as a police officer is walking down the street, or you're the clerk in a 7-Eleven, if someone walks in with a gun at 1:30 in the morning, what's your first reaction? You are going to think you're being robbed. So you dial up the police and you say, "Somebody's in the store, they've got a gun, and I think they're going to rob me."
Yep.
Do we want the police to tell that individual, you know, it's probably just a nice concealed weapons permit holder or somebody that's carrying openly, not a danger to you at all. Go ahead and just take care of business. Let us know at the point that he points it at you, then we'll come and deal with it. And that's exactly what we face in this state, especially with our laws. So think about Trolley Square, right? The individual who went in and committed those crimes in Trolley Square was carrying those firearms legally. Until the point he levels a shotgun and shoots and kills Jeff Walker, there's nothing the police could have done. That is not the way the law should be. We should be able to interdict because we want to prevent crime from occurring, not simply respond after the fact, especially in the event of a tragedy, and document it.
That's right. The open carry amendment was one of those that was discussed at the Utah State Legislature this year. And I remember that there was this gentleman who was walking around a mall with a weapon, but he had it.
It was an AR-15.
An AR-15 on.
So a semi-automatic, but an assault rifle.
But he was making a point, and going back to sort of the broader and more philosophical, Senator Hatch was among those who rejected amendments that would have required background checks, a limit on the size of gun magazines, and a ban on assault weapons. And he, like many, said that his vote was about the Second Amendment. Polls have shown that the vast majority of Utahns support background checks. Is this really all about a different reading of the Constitution? I mean,
it's a good issue. And so as you look at it, right, I don't want to debate the Second Amendment because certainly there's a lot of interpretation that takes place. But conducting background checks, conducting limits on the types of firearms. The Second Amendment doesn't say you can carry whatever you want, wherever you want, whenever you want, and however you want, right? Absolutely not. You can still have access to these firearms. And as I said, those examples before, we restrict those currently. So absolutely we can restrict them. A couple things to keep in mind when you talk about this debate. So that individual who's carrying a rifle, imagine if I told my 450 police officers, from now on, we're going to carry our rifles slung across our chests as we do business every day. The outcry would be this is a police state and the police chief has lost his mind. But yet we're okay with the public doing just the same thing. Again, ridiculous in my mind. The other thing, as you look at, I mean, and it is certainly a hard debate when you talk about magazines and capacity and some of those other things. Recently, there was a study done on all the mass shootings that we've had in this country. 68% of the time, police agencies across this country interdict and unfortunately have to take the life of that individual in most circumstances, but they interdict. And the majority of times when they do that is when the person has either run out of ammunition, the gun has jammed, or they're in the process of reloading. That speaks volumes when you look at factual information and say, boy, if we limited the number of rounds someone has available to them, maybe we could interject early and maybe it'll save at least one life, if not many more.
I'm going to turn our attention away from guns and to immigration just because we are limited in time here for this interview. That debate is currently underway in the Senate, and immigration reform seems likely to at least get out of that chamber. though there's stiff opposition in the House of Representatives. You recently penned a statement titled, "True Immigration Reform is Not Measured by Heavy-Handed Police Tactics." What is that statement about? Why did you pen that statement?
Well, I'm very encouraged. Let me say this right up front. I'm very encouraged by the direction that we're going as far as immigration reform. The system needs to be reformed. But we don't measure success in that system by how many arrests we're going to make of the people who might be violating. Part of immigration reform has to deal with those people who are in this country and who have been for years and years and years. And in some cases, especially those individuals that have been born here, right, have no homeland other than the United States. And so we need an avenue to where those individuals can become legal citizens or residents of the United States and not have to worry about police interdiction. Unfortunately, what we're seeing time and time again is you're seeing that up front, before we're even going to start talking about reforming the system, we want to know what all the penalties are and how law enforcement is going to deal with it and how heavy-handed, quite frankly, we're going to be in dealing with people. That's not the direction that we need to go, because once we start down that avenue, we put police in the position of being immigration agents. To enforce immigration, you have to take into account race, right? Because there's no way to look at a group of people and say, you're documented and you're not, other than the color of their skin. Nobody's going to stop you and I and ask us if we are in the country legally.
And that's, well, no, you can.
No, go ahead, please.
I was going to say that, we've had legislative measures in this state that tried to oblige the police to check the status of suspected illegal immigrants. What's your opinion of the homegrown attempts to deal with immigrants? And what about, for example, Arizona's famous Show Me Your Papers law, the so-called Utah copycat of that law? How does that sentiment affect enforcement of this issue?
Well, I have been an outspoken opponent against those types of laws, because one of the things that I think is most crucial is that local law enforcement needs to be available and accessible to all individuals. Because going back in the gun debate, right, our purpose is to prevent crime from occurring. The mistake that we've made in Homeland Security for years and years now is the fact that we have alienated large segments of the Muslim American community, because unfortunately they have been caught up in this broad net or this stereotype that you might be a terrorist. Well, in fact, if you think about it, if we are looking at a group of individuals and we're saying, all right, it might be Muslim extremists, right? Well, who better than to tell us about that than people of the same faith, religion, understanding, culture? But when you alienate everybody, when you paint with a broad brush, what happens is those very people that will work with you the best and help you and cooperate in order to prevent something from occurring, you've alienated and they're not going to come forward. And in fact, we conducted a study here locally that we had a group of professors from across the country come in and take a look and interview some of our citizens here. And in fact, white Utahns who are citizens are less likely to report crime to the police if they believe the police are enforcing immigration, because it interjects bias. And there's no way around it, right? In order to enforce immigration, you have to look at race. And when we start taking into considerations race, nationality, what you look like, where you're from, that is the wrong direction for local law enforcement to go, because we should not be in that. Laws that we enforce are based on observable behavior, articulable, right? Reasonable suspicion and probable cause, the standards for law enforcement in order for us to take action, are based in I see your behavior and I believe that behavior to be against the law or going to be against the law, so I'm going to interdict, right? Race does not fall into that category of behavior.
So the thing that you wrote, which was true immigration reform is not measured by heavy-handed police tactics, there are parts of immigration reform as it stands now or proposed amendments that are trying to get local law enforcement to do this kind of enforcement?
Yes. There's actually some amendments that say if you don't actively engage in immigration enforcement, we're going to withhold federal funding from you, which is, again, ridiculous. And so the notion, and it's actually been said by some of the people sponsoring the bill, that the idea is to get away from anyone who might be a sanctuary city or a sanctuary. Well, I'll tell you what, I'm proud to be a sanctuary city, because we should welcome all individuals. The only people who are not welcome in Salt Lake City are those who are going to engage in criminal activity. Right? Being in the state of Utah undocumented is not a crime. It is a civil penalty that's associated with it. We don't enforce civil regulations, especially not federal civil regulations. You can only be detained and deported if you are in the state of Utah undocumented. In fact, the act of crossing the border is a crime, but the act of being here is not. And so that needs to be separated. The other thing that is very alarming, and this is something that the major city chiefs, for my entire involvement for the last 12 years, even predating me as the police chief, has said, we do not want civil detainers, civil immigration detainers, put on the NCIC system. The NCIC system is a database that we keep all wanted criminals, that we keep property, stolen property, and those types of things, so that we can identify it easily as a police officer. So imagine I stop you on the street in the middle of the night. I run your name, and it comes back and says, he's this person, he's committed a crime, or he's wanted for this crime, right? I can easily detain you, take you to jail, and no matter where you are in the country, right, that is a process by which law enforcement works very effectively and shares information. If you start putting civil detainers on there, it clutters the system. Law enforcement officers, right, have no way to distinguish, especially in the middle of the night, if you can imagine, what is a civil violation? What is a criminal violation? Who do you call? And so we will unnecessarily detain people. In fact, not unnecessarily, we will unlawfully detain people beyond the scope of our investigative process. That is unconstitutional.
And what about the idea of having immigration enforcement ride along with police officers in cars?
Well, see, there again, what you're trying to develop as a local law enforcement officer is the trust of everybody in the community that they can come forward and let you know what's going on. When you are seen as an immigration agent, they are not going to come forward and talk to you. And that's been proven time and time again, and you've seen it in this country. Individuals who have been victims of crime, who are witnesses of crime, do not come forward because of fear of deportation for themselves or their family members. In fact, there was a very tragic case that occurred back east in which an individual was beaten severely on the stoop of his apartment complex, right? All they found was a lot of blood. Well, fortunately, there was a camera that documented this whole thing. When they tracked this person down, he in fact was brutally beaten and robbed. The reason he didn't come forward is not because of his own status, because of some of his family members that he didn't want to expose. And so what you have, when the criminals are safe, right, when they can prey on people and they know they're not going to come forward and cooperate with the police, well, then criminals thrive. That is the element that they want to be in, and unfortunately, that's why crime will go up.
And so you can create victims out of a whole segment of society.
Absolutely. Well, we see the same thing in our homeless population here. There's a reason people sell drugs in and around Pioneer Park. It's not because it's a beautiful park and it's shady to sell drugs in. It's because, one, you have some people down there who have found themselves in addictive circumstances. But two, we in society accept people standing around. If you take those same drug dealers and you put them up on the east bench, I'm going to get 1,000 calls that say, hey, there's somebody out of place here. You put them down there and you have our homeless population who unfortunately have been moved along, written citations and everything else by the police for many, many years, who don't want interactions with the police. They don't come forward and tell us about the person who's now abusing them, making them hold drugs, mule drugs, hold money. It is a vicious cycle. And again, that's when you see crime increase, when we lack the cooperation of all members of our community.
Chief Burbank, we are out of time, and so I wanted to thank you for joining us today, and I look forward to our future discussions.
Thank you very much. It's a pleasure.
That's Salt Lake City Police Chief Chris Burbank. We had to pare down the interview for this broadcast, but you can hear the full version on our website, kcpw.org. You won't want to miss it. Tomorrow on the program, we have Clarin Narde-Riddle, former chief of staff for Senator Joseph Lieberman and co-founder of the group No Labels, a nonpartisan political organization that counts former Utah Governor John Huntsman Jr. among its ranks.
You know, it's so much easier to attack somebody when you don't know them. But if you do know them and you know that they care about many of the same things that you do, you can maybe get to some solutions, which is what No Labels is about.
That conversation, your local news summary, and more coming up tomorrow on The Rundown, here on KCPW.
This is Debbie Knotts with Albion Financial Group, supporters of KCPW, providing wealth management in the Intermountain West for over 29 years, online at albionfinancial.com.
This is Fran Prine with CRSA Architecture, KCPW's supporters. CRSA serves the Intermountain West communities and clients through restoration and renovation for historic buildings and homes. Information about our firm's projects and services, including green building design, is available at crsa-us.com.
Thanks for listening to KCPW at 88.3 and 105.3 FM with translator facilities at K287 AE in Holiday.
The 21st season of the Downtown Farmers Market is underway and continues every Saturday from 8 a.m. to 2 p.m. at Pioneer Park through October 19th. The market features over 250 vendors offering local produce, meats, cheeses, and much more. Details are online at slcfarmersmarket.org. KCPW is a proud sponsor of the 2013 Salt Lake City Downtown Farmers Market.
The Rundown today was produced with help from Lauren Colucci and Jesse Ellis. Our theme music was composed by Tim Myers. I'm Roger McDonough, and thanks for tuning in. You're listening to KCPW, the Utah Business Report, and Marketplace are coming up next.